I was impelled to go to the 91st Psalm because we were talking about this dwelling in the secret place of the Most High. And in reading it, I found, I haven't read it for years, I found some very surprising little bits in it. And we realize that our scripture, especially areas of the Old Testament, are about as ancient as anything gets. Some of the Psalms are supposedly written by David. I'm sure that they go back to the furthest reaches of antiquity, where man was aware of this spiritual nature. And this awareness had to be expressed, and it was presented to the tribes or the clans or however it was, informing them that there was a way to live that was free of the dangers and the tribulations of that world. He who dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. So this consciousness, here we are in this beautiful place, in the consciousness of God, the shadow of the Almighty. We're not exposed out there in the sunlight, but we are in this consciousness of truth and love. And I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him will I trust. If we take this out of its, out of our conditioning of having God out there, and we realize that this fortress is within us, that this protection, this refuge, and what is a refuge? It's a place where you cannot be touched by this world. In Hawaii, their tradition was that if there you did something that was against one of the chiefs, kings, where you could be killed, they had a place of refuge. It was a little spit of lava that went out in the ocean, and it usually was guarded by the powers that be, and behind the fence were all of their tikis. And this was a place where the priests of the benevolent gods, not the war gods, they had their own temples, but this was where those gods of peace were honored. And if you were a fugitive, you could make it, and could make it swim across this little channel or somehow make it to the city of refuge. You were safe. No one could touch you. No matter what you had done, you were safe. And this is the nature of God as our refuge. When we experience this consciousness, nothing we have done can enter into that and bring its consequences. There's no punishment. There's no retribution. All there is in this consciousness is a oneness with the presence of God. Surely He shall deliver thee from the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. Well, that's assuming that we're all birds and that we're going to, that we're flying around in this world subject to these people that are wanting to try and catch us. Well, isn't that a wonderful analogy of this world? We are free, free as birds, but yet there are all of these concepts down there that are trying to snare us, grab us by the feet and pull us back down into this world, saying, no, we have to be in this cage of material sense. And the noisome pestilence, well, that's the pharmaceutical company, and boy, they are noisy. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor the arrow that flieth by day, nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor the destruction that wasteth at noonday. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. You see the detachment that spiritual living takes. I mean, we joke and we think, yeah, we're going to go and protest and campaign about the injustices of this world. But when we do that, from anything other than a suffering it to be so now or a rendering unto Caesar's, we are aligning ourselves back into that realm of conflicting forces. Now, Joel was passionate about being in the world but not of it. He said in many places that the infinite way is not a monastic way of life. We don't go off into the mountaintop and just meditate day and night. Because unless we are engaged in the world and bringing this spiritual light into the world is not going to benefit from this spiritual dimension of life, because they're in darkness, they're ignorant. They do not believe that this presence and peace is anything but a good feeling. That it has, you know, so we were at a class once in Europe where this person was rather cynical, but actually a thinking student. He says, "I just get sick of classes. Everybody comes just for some uplift and feel good, and then they go back to their lives of pain and suffering, and they're doing the same thing, and then once a year a teacher comes and they get this lift, and then it's back to the same old thing. What's the point of it all?" The point is that when you have that lift in class, you have to take that sense of illumination to the degree that you experience it and take it out into the world. If you don't take it out in the world and you hide your light under a bushel, it's going to go away. And then the class comes again, or a teacher comes again, and you get uplifted. You will live in this consciousness of God as you bring your light into the world. And you are only effective spiritually in the world when you are detached. When this world has absolutely no resonance in you, emotionally, intellectually, physically, you realize, I am living and moving and have my being in God, in this Christ consciousness, and I can live in this high tower and witness the thousand falling at your side and not have a tinge of emotion. Now that sounds very cold, but it is the only way that we are effective spiritually. Why? Now I know that it's been so saturated in the news, the killings in Virginia, and the human response is first one of terror, horror. Oh, how horrible, and what a horrible person that poor guy was. But then we bring in our truth and we say, well, but no, that's, you know, we can't judge. That's just an activity of this concept of human good and human evil. And that killing innocent people is obviously evil. And we have to correct somehow that evil. But how do we reconcile that kind of activity with the omniscient God that is supposedly out there controlling human events? People are praying to that God to come into their lives and to change their lives. And that God doesn't come into human consciousness. That God exists in spiritual consciousness. And we, when we experience spiritual consciousness, we then bring that activity of God into this world, into our circle, into what we are involved with. And if we accept massacres, if we accept war, if we accept the stock market, the economy, as power, then we are going to be swayed back and forth and constantly labeling this good and evil. Last year in Chicago, it came to me that the concepts that we build that form our experience, that manipulate our human experience, the building blocks of that material concept is judgment. We judge this good. Okay, we put a brick over there. That's the good side. We judge that bad. That's the bad side. And we go around our whole experience. And what have we done? We have built a wall around ourselves of concepts. And can we see then the world for what it is? You know, what's really happening? No. All we can see are our concepts. And maybe some bricks are huge. You know, those innocent students getting killed. Oh, that's a huge evil brick. That's going to go right in the keystone because we got to figure out what to do. And then everybody asks why. How did God let this happen? God had nothing to do with it. And when we realize that, and then we realize that life is eternal, not the human sense of life, but life that is hid with Christ in God, that I that we experience in this presence, that life is always going to be us, and it's always individually expressed. And when we remove all sense of judgment from the form of that expression, we realize then that expression is infinite. And we can look at these tragedies, not only the shooting in Virginia, but the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and all of the people that are suffering and all the conflict that's going on, and realize that that has no place in spiritual consciousness. And that all those individuals that seem to be suffering are in fact spiritual beings. And what appears as death is but just a shift out of this experience. Now, when the shift comes unexpectedly and unwanted, yeah, that's not a pleasant thing. But God had nothing to do with that shift. God has nothing to do with the wars in Iraq. That is all the product of this belief in good and evil. And that is the 10,000 at thy right and the 1,000 at thy left. You can almost say that it's not people, they're concepts. 10,000 concepts fall at thy right and 10,000 concepts fall at thy left. But those concepts do not come nigh your dwelling place, because you are living in this consciousness of peace and love. Because thou hast made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation, living in this consciousness, there shall be no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come near your dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over thee, to keep thee in all thy ways. Now, what are God's angels? That is the, in metaphysics, it was God's thoughts passing to man. If we take it up into mysticism, it is our individual experience of the presence of God. That atmosphere, and especially when that atmosphere comes upon us out of the blue. I'm sure we've all experienced, we walk into a room or a place and suddenly there's a deep peace. Well, when we feel that, acknowledge that. Somehow the presence of God has been so recognized in that place that we, in our attunement to this spiritual dimension, we pick it up. We say, ah, feel that. And even though we know that God does not dwell in holy places or holy mountains, this spiritual consciousness is omnipresent. And if it's been recognized and lived and honored in different places, and we're attentive to that, we feel that. So that is the activity of God, the angel of God. And that angel of God has charge over our life when we live in this spiritual consciousness. And they shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. The he within me is greater than that he that is within the world, and it makes the crooked places straight. All of these references going way back in antiquity testify that there is a dimension of life that if we but entertain it in consciousness, gives us a degree of freedom over the pain and suffering that seems to be inherent in this world. And thou shalt tread upon the lion and the adder, the young lion and the serpent shalt thou trample underfoot, meaning that in this consciousness we have dominion. We can find ourselves in the most dire of circumstances and find that presence of God is there, upholding, maintaining, and sustaining our experience. So that if we've experienced war, if we've experienced hardships, if we've experienced the negatives of this world, those human experiences fade in our, they're no part of our consciousness, and as they fade in our memory, we realize that we have always been in this spiritual realm. And it is our awareness of it that brings it into our experience. Now, this is what I found interesting, because here the voice changes. It's no longer the initiate or the person, the individual, dwelling in that secret place of the Most High. Now, it is that spiritual eye. Because he has set his love upon me, therefore I deliver him. I will set him on high, because he hath knoweth my name. There's a shift. When we know that name, that secret, suddenly it isn't God out there that is doing something to us. We realize that I and this spiritual presence is one. And I am living in that high consciousness. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. So this I becomes one. We honor the I, that spiritual self, but that spiritual self is one. And it honors itself in us. And that is the mystical marriage, where we are one in this consciousness. And in that state of being, we are in a state of freedom. With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation. So you see, all of the fulfillment in life is in this mystical union, this marriage and oneness. And we are fulfilled and shown the salvation. What is the salvation of the Lord? The salvation of the Lord is knowing that truth that makes us free. That is the salvation that is inherent in this discipline.